Why go to Spain for the sun when you could come to sunny Yorkshire? Hello and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me here at League Express HQ, basking in the sunshine, we're joined by Mr. Martin Sadler.
Hi.
Matthew Shaw. Mm-hmm. And making his debut, it's Mr. Alex Davis.
Word of warning, don't criticise Cass.
I wasn't going to.
You'll get in trouble with Alex if you criticise Cass.
Yeah, we don't want to be getting off on the wrong
foot.
No,
like, yes. Anyway, lots and lots to talk about this week. Shortly, we'll be
talking about Cass.
We can later, yes, definitely. Shortly, we'll be talking to our French correspondent, the brilliant Mike Rylands, who'll be coming on to help us preview that Catalans v Wigan match at the Camp Nou. When did that happen, by the way? It was always the new camp.
It's the new camp.
Adidas Adidas business.
Well,
I would have
thought that the Camp Nou is more of the Spanish term, whereas New Camp is more of an anglicised version of that.
Well, speaking of sunny European destinations, later we'll also be previewing the Summer Bash, which will be taking place on the Lancashire Riviera this weekend with our very own Lancashire Torridor, Gareth Walker.
Leon Price's favourite holiday destination.
And better than Bondi.
Yeah.
It is. There was a George Formby reference in there as well, if anyone keen listeners who are over a certain age. Anyway, I don't know about Leeds in crisis, but we should start with Bradford in bloom.
Yeah,
wrote that on the train. I was very happy with that.
What a day! What a brilliant day it was. It was a proper cup tie, and you could feel it around the ground before. You go to games sometimes and you don't sense that anticipation, that buzz that you do. But it was so apparent. Everyone was real. Even the Leeds fans. I think for Leeds fans, it was probably nerves rather than excitement. Because we're thinking, we could lose this. And then Bradford fans were just so excited.
It was great that the crowd was a five-figure one, wasn't it? You know, because we were a bit unsure what the crowd was going to end up as. And, you know, just to see that stadium at least partially full again was a great, great thing to see. And the way the game panned out, you know, with great respect to Leeds, but it was the right result, wasn't it, for the competition?
Oddsall, I've been going while they've been in the Championship, and it's a bit soulless. It just looks old and haggard, you know, the peeling paint and the it's untidy. It's scruffy looking, but that game and the cauldron of noise, it made you realise how special a place it can be.
And it took,
if it's full.
I mean, you're a bit too young to remember it, but the Bulls' heyday in the mid '90s and up to, say, 2005, it was just an incredible place to go and watch rugby league in those days.
Well,
had a great side.
I never enjoyed it because I only ever went to watch Halifax. It'd normally be something like 60-0. So I remember getting an iron brew bottle chucked at me once as well. It whacked me on my head. So my memories aren't particularly fond of the heyday.
Was this before you were a journalist?
Yeah, it was. I've never been a likable person.
It was. Don't worry. It was his dad. Just
probably was, to be fair.
Bradford aren't back yet. But that was a big sign of intent there, Alex.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they were, of course, led by the Challenge Cup king, John Keir. And I was sorting through the pictures on Sunday, and all the pictures were absolutely fantastic of John on the sideline, sort of leading the Bradford fans in their jubilation. I think it's an absolutely brilliant result for Bradford, just to show that they're not back, as you say, but
they're getting back.
They're on the way back.
Yeah.
Well, John said, didn't he, in the build-up, that the fixture, not necessarily the result, but the fixture, if it's done right, could symbolise the rebirth of Bradford Bulls. And I think after that, you would say that, he's probably got a point.
It's on its way.
Yeah, they're sort of in the teenage years, maturing now and learning from the mistakes.
And it would be, if Bradford ever do get back into Super League, and I trust they will at some stage, what a day that's going to be.
See what they get against Halifax. Because, you know, the people are on the journey now, aren't they? It's another local rival.
Interesting to see how many Halifax fans go there.
Halifax, we'll come back to Bradford in a second, but they safely navigated themselves through Dewsbury quite convincingly in the end.
Yeah, they were good.
Halifax have got their own history in the Challenge Cup, and you know, it's semi-finals
At Oddsall, of course, some of that history as well.
I even as a staunch Halifax fan, I'm a bit tired of the tale that my dad tells me about John Pendlebury and that tackle. Yeah, Dad, you've told me before, but you're right, look. Yeah, Halifax were decent, but with no disrespect to them, they aren't the story this week. Bradford, they were good as well, weren't they? It wasn't, let's be honest, Leeds were abysmal. If you were rating them out of 10, you'd give them a 1.
The thing that was interesting for Leeds was that he dropped Richie Myler, didn't he? I don't think he was out injured. I think he was
dropped.
And that struck me as really quite... you know, that was Richard Agar's first game in charge. And obviously he was wanting to make some changes to improve what had gone before under Dave Ferner. But I wouldn't have thought that the main culprit, the main person responsible for their poor play so far this season was Richie Myler. You know, I think whatever you think about Richie Myler's merits as a player, he is the chief organiser on the field. And without him, I thought they looked lost.
That's,
you know,
the problem, that's the problem for me, though, with Myler. I think Richie Myler's an okay player, but he's not the lead guy. He's not a lead halfback. He's the supporting halfback, and he's been the...
I think he's been an organiser, you know, for quite a bit of this
but
season.
I don't... Yeah, he has, Martin. You know, I don't disagree with that. Richie Myler has been the organiser, but look where they are in the league.
They brought in a partnership of Lola here and McClelland. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, and I don't think
that Sutcliffe worked. Wasn't it? Well, Sutcliffe played fullback.
Yeah, Lolly here was at fullback. Yeah. That's right. But I don't think that it worked. Whatever they did, you know. Lolly here popped up in the halves a lot, but you know it didn't. It just didn't look to have any cohesion.
They haven't got a commanding halfback, and I will have this argument with everyone wants it. Richie Myler has his strengths. He's not the lead halfback,
and of course. When you bring in Lola here into that halfback partnership, who isn't a natural halfback, he is a fullback, and he always was.
He will always be a supporting halfback. He will be the runner. Richie Myler is at his best when he's running at the line and playing the support game.
And when he's partnered with Lola here, he can't do
he
that
can't
because
do that.
Lola here is the runner, and Myler needs.
Yeah, I think
here.
Two similar players. Again, Richard Agar left out Donaldson, didn't he? Which struck me as surprising because Donaldson would have been really highly motivated to play well at Bradford, having you know been there. For so many years, you know, why did he leave him out? I mean, he's back in the 19 for this week against Castleford, and I think Donaldson's been a real good player for Leeds this season.
He's done okay
by and large.
But there were players cutting corners that were trying to do the get out of things easily. Mm. They're not working together. Matt Diskin, I did the game for Radio Leeds, and Matt Diskin, who knows both clubs very well, was on it. He says, "I'm watching a team right now that's full of individuals with their own agendas," and I couldn't agree more.
Well, they need to get to the bottom of it pretty quickly, don't
they? They do. In time for Thursday's game, and we'll come back to that in a second. I mean, you mentioned Richie Myler there. He could be, you know, the best scrum half in rugby league, but can he do an interview on the pitch during a match? Now, Matthew, you're a broadcaster of some note.
Who works for the BBC. Thanks for this, Ben.
No worries. I quite like the idea of, you know, even at this stage of our, you know, history of broadcasting and that kind of thing, there's always new avenues you can explore. Mm. Does it work?
Well, they do it in cricket slightly differently. They have the mic on a certain player and they talk to them. And that seems to work. In rugby league, in high intent... I think my issue watching it was the amount of times they felt the need to apologise because of the swearing. Well, okay... Understand that, but you kind of know what you're signing.
That wasn't you, Matt, was it?
No,
I trust.
I was far away. Martin, you need a taxi from the press bench to the pitch at Oddsall. There was no way they were hearing me. That was my criticism, that they kept feeling the need to apologise. Well, you know when you're putting mics down there that you're going to pick those things up. So I think they need to be a little bit savvy with that. I have no particular problem with them interviewing players in those moments, but mic sensitivity was probably a problem.
My problem with it is when you talk to a player in the middle of a try, their mind's on other things. They're not going to say anything that's particularly interesting, I think, at that particular moment.
Is it more about being on the pitch though and letting the audience come with them?
Yeah, well, they want to show that we can go onto the field, and they do that at the start with Robbie Hunter-Paul, and they've done that for years where they go and mill around in the warm-up and do all that kind of thing. And the NRL do it a lot, where they'll interview players coming off the pitch at half-time. They do that a lot. So I guess that there is a point that they are showing that they can go onto the field of play and interview the players.
See, I don't think it's a bad thing, personally. You know, if it's just part of, you know, broadcasting, bringing the players and the play closer to the viewer.
The players will hate it. Some players will.
If you're talking to a guy who's just scored a try... and he's got the chance to speak in front of a million and odd viewers, I don't think he'll hate it that much.
Well,
to be honest, I think he'd be pretty pleased.
I also think it will lose substance because Brad Dwyer was quite good when he was speaking about how they were trying to get him through the middle. Well, he's effectively just giving his team's tactics away after 3 minutes of the game. The coach are going to be saying, just
or has he? Has he just put a red herring out there?
Well, that's the next step, you know, isn't it? Players actually going along with it.
You can imagine the coach has been thinking.
And we do have to say, I mean, you mentioned it, the audience, over a million watching it on a Saturday afternoon in the old grandstand slot. That's not bad, is it?
On BBC One, yeah, absolutely. I don't know what the audience was for Sunday afternoon, which was also on BBC One, wasn't it? But, you know, it was a... I think we were really lucky, actually, that there were two fantastic games on BBC One. And you've got to bear in mind that those two audiences are by far the biggest audiences of the year on television to watch rugby league games in this country. There's, you know, with great respect to Sky, those audiences very, very easily outstrip the Sky audiences, and that's worth bearing in mind.
Increased exposure to the sport, as
yeah, because you're getting into the casual fans of the sport that don't necessarily watch it on a weekly basis.
Somebody who's just there on a Saturday afternoon wants to watch some sport, and you know,
I've said this publicly before. I think Mark Chapman's wonderful.
Mm. Absolutely,
he just delivers it so well in the sense that he explains what's going on, he orchestrates it and navigates it so that people who don't know the sport as well as us do around this table can understand what they're doing tactically and the history of the sport, while also still being able to resonate with
the thing about Mark Chapman is he's got a great sense of humour, which I think is very important in that role, and he's very good at getting the guys who are in the studio with him, you know, to give their opinion and to sort of, you know, take the mickey out of each other a bit, but still keeping it serious. And that's really quite an interesting challenge.
And he appeases both our group, where we are, we know exactly what's going on in the rugby league game, but he also appeases the people that don't know anything about the game, because that's what he represents. He represents someone that has an interest in the game, knows enough about it to carry it, but also doesn't watch it necessarily on a weekly basis.
I've got to say, I think John Wilkins is very good on that.
He is,
you know, on the BBC
well. In a completely different way, I think Jamie Peacock, I just absolutely entranced by him.
Yeah,
because he doesn't hold back. Tells it as it is.
That's right.
And when it's coming from a man of that caliber, you can't help but listen. I'd love him to actually be the summariser calling the game. I think he'd be wonderful.
Well, maybe that's his next role.
Do we have to factor in the BBC, you know, when we talk about the upcoming contract negotiations and all
absolutely.
That? Because, the NFL have really, you know, been encouraged by, speaking about Chapman, what the work that's being done with the NFL Highlights show. It's all part of the strategy, isn't it, of increasing awareness of the sport?
Yeah, of course. The Challenge Cup is really vital. And whatever happens with Super League, it's got to run in parallel with a fresh look at the Challenge Cup, how it can be made to be more attractive, getting bigger audiences, bigger attendances, and so on and so forth. There are ways to do that, but yes, and highlight shows are really important. You know, the Super League show simply being regionalised. I mean, I know it's not regionalised on a Tuesday afternoon normally, but on a Monday night it is, and it's about time that was made national, isn't it? And any future broadcast contract, surely that's got to be one of the objectives of the RFL.
Because obviously we're labelling ourselves as a regional sport.
Absolutely, yes.
It'd be amazing.
And we're not a regional sport anymore. Look at, you know, in League One, London Scholars, joint top of the league, Coventry beating Workington. Great results.
It'd be fantastic if we could find a way to get more live rugby on the BBC. How you do that, I don't know.
When you talk about the new contract, it's really interesting to think about how the FA Premier League do it, because they have tranches of games, don't they? They have a Saturday lunchtime game that they put up for auction, a Saturday tea time game that they put up for auction, the two games on a Sunday that they put up for auction,
and the highlights
Monday night games, the highlights programs. So, you know, when you think about it, it would be perfectly possible for rugby for Super League to say, you know, who's going to bid for the Friday night game? Who's going to bid for the Thursday night game?
But would the BBC take that?
Well, you've just got to build up
1.1 million on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good.
I'll tell you a story. I mean, might have told you this before, but the greatest sports administrator ever was Pete Rozelle of the NFL. And when he took over in 1958, the NFL was a third-rate competition with about 10 clubs in it. It was It was really way behind every other sport, way behind college football. But Pete Rozelle reorganised it, and he got that there were three major broadcasters in America at the time, NBC, ABC and CBS. And Rozelle negotiated contracts with those companies so that two of them were covering the NFL on three-year contracts and one was left out. And Rozelle was very canny because he actually got all the fans to sort of, you know, if NBC and ABC got the contracts, he got the fans to sort of really comment on which was the best coverage, holding them to account. So what happened was that both TV stations did their best to make sure the coverage was terrific. And after 3 years, the contract came to be renewed. And the audiences had gone up so much that the third broadcaster, the one that had been left out, was back in, desperately trying to make sure that they got part of the deal. And Rozelle's approach was always to leave one of the broadcasters out to make sure that they bid up. There was a bidding war every time. And by the time he quit, which was in 1989, I think, you know, the income they got from broadcasting was something like 1,000 times greater per annum than when he started. They'd upped the money so much on that fairly simple basis. And he just understood that you couldn't go with just one broadcaster. You can't. If you want to make progress in future, you've got to have broadcasters bidding for your product. Mm-hmm. And that's what he understood, and that's what we don't seem to fully understand in rugby league, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. We'll just cover off some of the other results in the Challenge Cup, and then we've got to move on to our fixture preview because there's loads of things to talk about this week. We mentioned the Warrington Wigan match. Good game.
Great game. Wigan very unlucky.
Backish.
Yeah, back? I think they are. They'd won three on the bounce. Really had a very, very tough call go against them that cost them the game.
And if that try wasn't a try, then something's wrong with the rules of the game, in my opinion.
Awful decision.
I mean, I know Sean Wayne has come out this week and said it wasn't a try because it did, you know, touch Lulai's hand as he made the tackle. But frankly, was
the one later, though, a try, the double movement one?
I'm not... What do you think about that one?
I thought it was a try, but...
Wakefield also through. Commiserations to Widnes, 6-6 at half time. Give it a good go.
It was tight until the last 10 minutes, and they had a man sent off, didn't they?
Yeah.
Again, I'm sure we'll talk about it very shortly. But Championship showing up well again against
Absolutely.
Super League.
Yeah.
Catalan 62, Doncaster 6. It was always going to be a tough challenge, wasn't it, for Rich Stornside? Rangi Chase.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
He's a
fantastic player.
He's a talented player.
And of course, I grew up with watching Castleford at his absolute prime, and he was he was a joy in that 2011 season where he was just ripping teams to shreds for fun, and we'd signed a deal to send him to Salford, and we played them maybe about a few days after, and the Salford fans were cheering because he was ripping their team to bits, and then they knew that they were getting this player, this wonderful player, and even that was a couple of years after his prime. He was still brilliant.
Hull 28, Castleford 12. You can now concentrate on the league, I suppose.
Well, I think that's the feeling amongst the fans, was this was a week where, yes, if we want to win in the cup, but if we don't, it just gives us a couple more weeks to get some players back into the squad, because they're really, really struggling at the moment with injuries. Having Paul McShane and Grant Millington back is a boost, but it's going on too long where we've had too many players out that I think the players are starting to get a bit tired.
How big is this game on Thursday night between Leeds and Castleford?
Huge for both clubs. Because, Cass have been unlucky with injuries. One thing I will say, and Cass aren't the only club in this, they need to figure out why they're having these injury crises.
Definitely.
It's all right saying, we're unlucky. Don't happen to Saints, don't happen to Warrington.
Salford.
Don't happen to Salford. So what are the rest of these clubs doing? Why are they getting some? It can't be bad luck, because it was two years ago that you had a bad run. It's not a coincidence, I'm afraid. There is a reason that these things are happening, whether they're recruiting the wrong players who aren't durable enough, whether it's the conditioning. It could be a variety of things.
I thought you were going to tell us what it was, actually.
No, I have no idea. Martin, look at me. I'm not one to talk about fitness. I might be a durable table tennis player, but not rugby league. But
I think it's a valid point that we are Castleford are having a lot of injury problems year in, year out. There was only one season that they really didn't, and of course we all know which one that one was, 2017.
Mm. Let's look at this on a more positive basis, though. What about the players who have been given a chance
in
the Castleford side? You know, I thought I'm quite interested that Will Mayer has actually got a chance at long last to have a few outings with the first team and hasn't done that badly.
No, and
in
of
my
course
opinion.
The big one is Corey Aston. He's been a Super League club now for 3 years, and this is the first chance he's got, and he's done very well. Mm. Obviously, Aston isn't going to be a world beater like Luke Gayle is, but Aston is doing a very good job. He's a great support player, and he's getting a lot of tries.
Take the point, but why are they losing games then?
Well, that's the thing. Aston hasn't won any of the games he's played.
Yeah,
is this?
And that's not a dig at Aston. No. But if Aston's playing well, but they're losing, where, you know,
what does it?
Doesn't add up, does it?
What are the chances of Leeds bouncing back on Thursday?
I think there's a good chance, actually.
Huge chance.
I think they've a good chance.
I think it's a big chance because they've just lost to a Championship side in the Challenge Cup. They're going to want to make a big statement. And what better
you think
way?
That is rock bottom? It can't get any worse.
Well, not really. No, you can't losing to a Championship side. It doesn't happen very often. We know that as a Super League team, losing to a Championship side is very, very rare.
Happened twice in two rounds.
Mm. Yeah, Halifax did it to London,
but
going down it's still quite rare. But the question about Thursday night is which club is going to be the most highly motivated. Leeds are going to be playing in front of their supporters with the stadium fully opened for the first time. The new North Stand will be gleaming, you know, and full of people. It's going to look quite incredible, I think, because it is an incredible development. And I think they are going to be desperate to win that game. Castleford have coming into it with four defeats, so they'll be obviously keen to win as well. But I just think Leeds' motivation might just be a bit greater than Castleford's.
What a game on Saturday, incidentally. I mean, it's the return of Wakefield to Ealing,
yes,
isn't it?
We're on to those loop fixtures, aren't we now? Where they're coming about and repeating a bit too quickly.
They're not going to go into that game the same way they went into it the first time, are they?
No, you would imagine that Wakefield would win this, wouldn't you? Because they'll know what to expect. Whereas the first game of the season, they probably went down in a bit of a lackadaisical mood. Complacency probably hit them, you know, thinking they were going to win easily, and they got turned over, and good for London for doing that. But it's been more difficult for London more recently, but they've, as Matt says, they've put in some good performances, just not quite winning ones.
I tell you what, if Huddersfield were to beat Hull KR, Cass were to beat Leeds, and London were to beat Wakefield, and those stars aligned, and London, Leeds and Hull KR were all joint bottom after 14 rounds, then it would be getting very, very tasty.
It would be 15 rounds, in fact.
15, yeah. It would be getting very, very tasty if that proves to be the case.
Mm.
Well, anyway,
that's a big if. You're asking for
it. It is a big if.
And I personally don't see London beating Wakefield, but...
Well, we should touch upon the two other Challenge Cup results, which we've not mentioned yet. Salford 18, Hull KR 32, Huddersfield 16, St Helens 22. Friday night, back in the league, as if by magic, Huddersfield taking on Hull KR, St Helens taking on Salford. St Helens v Salford is the TV game, incidentally.
So Justin Holbrook's been there 2 years now, in fact. He came Magic Weekend, didn't he? Since the beginning of 2018, they have a win rate of 85% since the beginning of 2018. Only one team during one season has done better than that in the Super League era. And that's the St Helens treble winning side of 2006.
Mm.
So they've got a win rate better than Bradford when they won it all, better than when Leeds won it all. That's how good this St Helens team is. They are, I described in my League Express match report, as cold-blooded winners.
Actually, they're almost too good, aren't they? They're too good for everybody else, really. At this stage, yeah. I mean, you don't know that that's going to endure, though, because you might have said that last year. At this time.
And the year before with Castleford as
well. Yeah, but then they ran into the Catalans in the Challenge Cup semi-final. And I don't think they ever really recovered from that setback. And, you know,
They'd been wobbling a little bit before. They were winning games, but not as convincingly as they had been.
Yeah, and then and it was catastrophic for them that they didn't get to the grand final when they lost to Warrington.
They're just winners. They're just a machine. that churns out wins.
The Giants lacked that little bit of cutting edge to break the Saints and win the game.
They just lack a little bit of quality, the Huddersfield. They're not a million miles.
But they were excellent in defence.
Yeah, it's a big game for Hull KR on Friday night, isn't it?
Yeah, well, big game for both teams. Because if Huddersfield can win that, they're then potentially six points clear of relegation. And probably think they're all right. If they don't, they're only four off, Hull are level with them. Leeds could potentially be level with them too. So arguably, we talk about good segues on this show, it's probably a bigger week for London.
Well, London against Wakefield on Saturday, as we said. Also on Saturday, Warrington against Hull, the other Hull club. Warrington?
Well, Warrington are still the only club that look as though they could challenge Saints this year, aren't they? Let's face it. I don't think any other club has got the consistency. Maybe Wakefield might argue with that, in third place. But Warrington certainly... although, they only just held off Wigan, didn't they, on Sunday? But they did hold them off. Yeah. You know, the Warrington last year would have probably lost that game. So I can't see Hull winning at Warrington. Hull are such an up-and-down side. I've never quite known a side that gets up and goes down with quite the regularity of Hull.
And that's
except perhaps Parramatta in the NRL.
And that's why I wouldn't write them off beating Warrington. Because you never quite know what you're going to
get. You never do, no, that's absolutely right.
Well, it's not the TV game. The TV game is obviously Catalan Dragons against Wigan, live at the Camp Nou.
New Camp.
And obviously it's a very big game, not just for Catalan Dragons, but for the sport of rugby league. And on Tuesday, I caught up with our very own French correspondent, Mike Rylance, to hear his take on this particular landmark fixture.
It's certain to be a massive game for rugby league in general, let alone French rugby league. Because obviously it's something that's never been done before, although the Catalans have played in Barcelona once before at the Olympic Stadium, not this stadium. This is the biggest stadium in Europe that they're playing in, and the Catalans themselves are on a high at the moment after the Challenge Cup win last year. I mean, in terms of their public profile, and I don't think that this Barcelona game would have come about had they not won the Challenge Cup. And obviously, there is a connection between Bernard Gouache, the chairman of the Catalans, and his counterpart at Barcelona FC, who come from the same kind of background. Gouache's family is Catalan by ancestry, and obviously there is a link there, which is brought this about, and all well and good. And we should see it really in Catalan terms, perhaps, rather than Spanish, because as we know, Catalonia is regard themselves there as a separate entity, even if not politically.
It is a relatively new club in many ways, and it is like taking that step up, isn't it?
It is, yeah. As I say, it wouldn't have happened without the Challenge Cup, and this is the next step along their route to making the game as a whole better known in France. And thank goodness they're there, because I think without them, without a Super League team, the French Federation, as I've said before, would be struggling more than it is at the moment. So it's down to the Dragons, really, to bring the game along with Toulouse, who are not quite there yet, but may well make it to the same level in the future. So yeah, it is a very big deal. And in terms of tickets sold, it looks at the moment as if the Super League record of 25,500, I think it is about to be broken, because 22,000 tickets at the latest, we're talking a few days away from the event here, have been sold. So we would expect that record to be broken, and that is another feather in the cap of the Catalan Dragons.
And when it comes to Catalonia and that side of things, I mean, Catalan Dragons have really made a signal of intent here with the kit that they've chosen to wear for this game as well. I mean, no accident of the colours used.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a good stroke that they pulled there, actually, to use those colours for this game. And it's a question of identity. Obviously, whenever a team turns out in a specific colour, leaving aside away strips, etc., it is a statement of their identity, and good on them.
And when it comes to Wigan themselves, the opposition, I mean, on paper, it's the right opponent, but this season hasn't really clicked for Wigan. But they have been getting the performances together of late, so that that's come along at the right time.
It has indeed, yes. And apparently, there have been about 3,000, I think, maybe more, tickets sold to Wigan fans. So they'll be out there in number. And it's good as well, as you say, that that the team is putting it together at last on the field this season. And it's bound to be a hell of a tussle, I think, whichever way you look at it. I'd be surprised if it wasn't anyway.
And when it comes to what the sport could get out of this event, obviously, I think we've had rugby league in Catalonia before, but then that's when the politics come into it, don't they? And what the international side is and that kind of thing. What's your sense on where next for the sport of rugby league in the city and region of Catalonia and Barcelona?
Well, yeah, you're right in saying that the rugby league has been here before twice, I think, actually. There have been major matches played in Barcelona. We're not absolutely certain what the situation is on the on the ground at the moment, except that the Spanish rugby league, rather than Catalonian rugby league, is active at the moment at various levels. But it's still some way away, I think, from reaching the kind of level that we would hope for. But who knows? This match may give everything a great impetus that we'd all welcome, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And what's your sense on what this is going to mean for Catalan Dragons in the future, Matt? Do you think there'll be more of this in the future?
I don't know about more matches played in Barcelona, but they've always had the intention of taking matches on the road right from the start. So we may see certain games selected to be taken to a specific targeted area in the future, and that's a good thing as well. You know, they're showing exactly the right approach to the expansion of rugby league in France and across the border in Spain as well. And it's very pleasing to see, and I think we should all support it.
So Mike Ryland's there, and I did promise him I would plug the book, The Struggle and the Daring, available in all good bookstores.
Of course.
What do we think of this game on Saturday?
It couldn't be more important, and it couldn't be more symbolic, really, could it? It's an incredible achievement to play in the new camp. And, I mean, obviously we're all looking very hard to see what the crowd is going to be. But I don't think, whatever the crowd is, and I hope it gets up to 30 or even up towards 40,000, I think it's just the mere fact that the Catalans are playing in Barcelona in front of a crowd of Catalan people that's going to have ultimately a big impact on rugby league. You know, will it? I mean, it could mean, but Barcelona's a really interesting club because we think of them as a football club. But actually, they're a multi-sports club, and there'd be nothing to stop Barcelona, if they so decided, if they wanted to set up a rugby league club as part of their operations. And, you know, because let's not forget that in 1995, when Maurice Lindsay was planning Super League, he talked at length about, you know, rugby league is going to have clubs from places like Barcelona. Mm. Wouldn't it be great if his prediction came true?
Well, Barcelona, in their constitution, it says that they're to provide sport for Catalonia, and you know they've even got an ice hockey team, which I think is really great.
Absolutely.
So it does seem like a bit of a missed opportunity for them not to have a rugby league team in the next few years.
Absolutely.
But that goes back to my next point. Really, we've done these kind of showpiece games on the road before at numerous venues, and it's never really stuck.
You can't just do one thing and move on. It's got to be this, then another, and then another, and build on it. A solid campaign. You can't just do one thing and move on.
Yeah, I agree.
Actually, it'd be great for the Catalans, perhaps even to play a game in Girona, or, you know, another major venue in Catalonia.
I think some of these we've had before, it's been, right, let's play the game, and then that's it. There's no, as Alex alluded to, there's been no legacy.
The best example of that is the 2013 World Cup playing a game in Bristol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, absolutely no follow-up that I can see anywhere, really. People did set up a club, Bristol Sonics, but they did it on their own without any help from
a central organisation. Even in Super League, was it Catalans and Wigan that went to Millwall?
Yes, it was. It was.
And that wasn't. I mean, what?
Right, they had been to Barcelona before, of course, with the Olympics.
Yeah. Warrington, yeah.
But what was the point of that Wigan Catalans game at Millwall?
This is where they've been a bit clever, because obviously they're wearing the Barcelona colours,
yeah.
And they're not just talking about the sport, are they? They're talking about Catalunya and the kind of, there's a bit of heart to it rather than it just being a cynical, well, here's a game of rugby
the
league.
Interesting news item in League Express, you know, pointed out this week that the invite came when Bernard Gouache went to see the Josep Maria Bartomeu, I think he's called, the Barcelona president, and they had lunch together. And the president said to Gouache, "What language should we speak in, Spanish or French?" And Gouache said, "Let's speak Catalan." Of course, Gouache is a Catalan himself. So they actually spoke in Catalan, and that really impressed the Barcelona officials, apparently, you know, that a Frenchman could speak their language. And that really smoothed the path to playing the game there.
Absolutely. And if Barcelona did decide to go down the rugby league path, they won't be the only sports club in Europe. Obviously, Red Star Belgrade have beaten to it. And they're playing Lancashire today, I think, in the Battle of Lancashire side.
Oh,
yeah, incidentally, in Serbia. So there we go.
Good.
Anyway, that's obviously not the only showpiece occasion this weekend. The Summer Bash is taking place at Bloomfield Road, and the home of Blackpool, and lots of exciting action ahead over the course of Saturday and Sunday. And to preview what's going on, I caught up with League Express's very own Gareth Walker.
I don't think the fixture planners could have landed any better in terms of the seven matches. You know, all seven look well matched, and there's loads of stake in every game. So, you know, if we get this weather as well, it's going to be a terrific weekend, I think.
It really is. And it all kicks off with the international affair, Toronto against Toulouse. And like you said, the schedule's so brilliant this year, it feels like. I mean, it's top of the table clash. And I think Toronto owe Toulouse one, and Toulouse need a win to claw Toronto back. So it's a vital game, this one.
Absolutely, yeah. That's got a bit of everything, hasn't it? I think the top two, as you say, but also two of the most attractive teams you'd want to watch, really. They had a remarkable game over in Toulouse back in March when the Wolfpack, I think they were 16-6 up at the break, and ended up losing 46-16. Toulouse just ran riot, and they can do that, Sylvain Houllez's team. So I think it'll be an attractive game to watch. As you said, Toulouse need a win to keep in touch with the Wolfpack at the top, and I think that's almost the ideal game to kick the weekend off with.
And then the next game, down the other end of the table, Rochdale against Swinton in a bit of a Greater Manchester derby. But also, it's a must-win for Rochdale, I feel, and a must-not-lose for Swinton.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a lot at stake, and those two teams have produced some terrific games in recent years. As you said, I think this is must-win for Rochdale. They won't want to get cut adrift at the bottom. They've got a new coach in Matt Calland, and by all accounts, their second-half performance against York on Sunday showed a lot of encouraging signs, so they'll be looking to take that into the game. I think Swinton deserve to be favourites. I think they've been competitive in most matches this year. They've got 4 points already, but I think that'll be a close one. Could go right down to the wire, I think.
And then, because the Championship's so brilliant, there's all kinds of permutations and battles going on across the division. We've got a playoff battle up next after that one, Featherstone against the York City Knights. I mean, this is superb, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah, and two of the most exciting young coaches in the game, I think it's fair to say. Certainly James Ford, his star continues to rise. You know, he's involved with England Academy now, and the work he's done with the Knights in guiding them to promotion and then into the top three of the Championship has been absolutely fantastic. Ryan Carr's come over from Australia. I think we're just starting to see now how he wants his side to play. He was a bit behind. He only arrived in January, and they went straight into matches, basically, in pre-season. But I think that'll be another game that's easy on the eye, and one come the end of the year that could be pretty important in terms of playoff places.
And that then leads us to the curtain closer for the Saturday, at least. And, what a game this is. I mean, it's a precursor now to the Challenge Cup quarter-final, isn't it? Bradford Bulls against Halifax. What Bradford and Halifax have done now for Championship Rugby this season, I think, it's safe to say, is superb. It's really put it in the shop window, and this is a great way to close off Saturday.
Yeah, they've both beaten Super League teams this year, haven't they? Bradford obviously leads at weekend, and Halifax knocked London out before that. They also had a terrific game on Good Friday where Bradford came back from looking well out of it to win. And then, as you say, you throw in the extra ingredient that they're going to be playing again in a couple of weeks as well in a Challenge Cup quarter-final. That really has got everything you would want from it. I think it's hard to pick a winner in that. I think Halifax will feel they should have won that Good Friday match. Bradford are obviously on a major roll. facts are under a new coach in Simon Grix, showing some good signs. So I think that's got a bit of everything as well. And it's a toss of the coin game, as I think a lot of these are at weekend.
And then it's off back to the B&B to rest up and get prepared, wake up, get some breakfast and all that, and then straight back on it on Sunday for three matches. Kicking off with Barrow Raiders against the Sheffield Eagles. That start there, that's an important game, that one, for both clubs, but for very different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, Barrow still haven't won, have they, since the opening day against Batley, so they'll be keen to kind of rectify that, while Sheffield have not stumbled a little, but two narrow defeats against Halifax and Lee after their flying start. And Barrow looking to get back on winning ways and not kind of lose, you know, fall further into the struggle at the bottom with Swinton playing Rochdale, then they will lose some ground on their rivals if they don't pick up a win. So, as you say, it's an important one for both teams and a good way to kick Sunday off.
And then it's the best-named derby, I think, in all of sport, the heavy woolen derby between Batley and Dewsbury. Both teams want to push themselves away from the relegation zone and start to get involved in the playoff battle, if possible.
Yeah, definitely. And they had a cracker on Good Friday, didn't they? Where Batley kind of recovered from the sending off of Wayne Retty and being down at that point. I think they were down to 11 men at one stage as well. To beat Dewsbury, so there's normally nothing in those matches between those two. They've had some fairly fierce battles at the Summer Bash the last few years, so I can't see there being more than a try or so in that. You know, if you look at the season's form so far, there's not been much to pit between them. Both will feel on the day they're the better side, so a cracker for Sunday afternoon.
And closing things off, a bit like Saturday, it's a beast of a game. Lee Centurions against the Widnes Vikings. A lot of people, I think, will be travelling up the M6 for this one. I mean, it's a great way to close off an action-packed weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was just under 6,000 there on Good Friday when Widnes beat Lee 30-12. But I think it'll be a bit closer than that this time. I think Lee are improving under John Duffy. Widnes have had a few injuries of late. They also had to play last weekend against Wakefield in the Cup, of course, while Lee had a bit of time off. So I think that'll be another close game. There should be a big crowd in there. You know, both sets of fans travel well. You also got the Kieran Patel factor up against his former club too. So plenty of ingredients to end the Summer Bash on a high.
Absolutely. And I mean, after how can I put this, quiet beginnings for the Summer Bash this season, As it's got closer, because of events on the pitch, it feels like there's a bit of momentum behind this event now this season, and it feels like it's going to be a good weekend, or am I misreading things?
No, I think you're exactly right, Ben, to be honest. I think because you've got clubs like Bradford and Halifax on a major high at the moment, we'll see a good crowd. You know, I think the record crowd could be under threat because we've got bigger clubs involved this year. You know, Bradford and York have come up and Widnes have come down, so while the attendance last year was perhaps a bit disappointing, I think this year's will blow that away. If we get some sunshine again, we could be looking at record figures. As we've said, the seven matches could not have been better picked in terms of being competitive and closely matched. You know, if people are looking for something to do at weekend, I'd get yourself down to Blackpool, because I think that's going to be a cracking couple of days' entertainment.
Gareth Walker there. Excited about the Summer Bash, Matthew?
Everyone will disagree with me. You might not.
I'm looking forward
to it. The best weekend of the year in rugby league.
Well, I've certainly
been
before.
That's because you like the Pleasure Beach, isn't it?
Well, I'm big now.
You can't get behind the Grand National.
I'm probably too big to get on some of the rides now with all the restraints. But no, I just love it. I love the Summer Bash. I don't know if it's because the crowd's smaller, but you just can see everything that's going on. You can, as a people watcher, you can see everything.
Do you think the venue is the right venue?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
It's not been the last couple of years, but I do think with the ownership issue of Blackpool being sorted, I do think there might be a few more coming out now of neutral persuasion.
I just think it's wonderful. The quality of the games, I love the championship, I love the product that the championship is. The Toulouse game last year was just outrageously good. They played London, and some of the tries were just amazing.
Well, the thing about it is, every game looks highly competitive.
There's only one. Barrow Sheffield. Which?
Well, even that, probably. I wouldn't bank on. You know, I wouldn't say that Barrow had no chance.
No.
I think, you know, they'll give their best.
I was referring to it in a story perspective. There's not really much you can say about that game, whereas all the others, you've got something to say. Where
the thing with the Bash is, it gives the Championship the coverage that it does now with Toronto, which is another thing, but they get that coverage every year. You say to me every year, you've loved watching it.
It's one of the few chances you get if on television to see the Championship clubs. I mean, this year, of course, we've got the clubs who play Toronto week by week, which is great. But certainly last year, I mean, obviously I can't go because I'm in the office. Yeah. I'm the sort of anchor man in the office. But the TV coverage, I think, is fantastic. I think mm-hmm. Sky do a really great job, I've got to say. You know, Neville Smith's, you know, I mean, he's left Sky now, but he's done a great job. And every game was really great to watch. Mm-hmm. Very exciting, enjoyable. They throw the ball about, you know, and there's a lot of local rivalry in those matches because they tend to be derby games. Yeah. And it makes for great television. And I just wish that Sky would broadcast a Championship game every week, not just Toronto, but, you know, any other, you know, big game, because there are big games every week.
I think we're getting very close, to Championship rugby being on frequently without just Toronto.
Absolutely.
Because people are actually realising how good the product is
Have
now.
Have you picked that up from anywhere in particular, or is that
just little whispers?
Mm. And of course, surely the results in the Challenge Cup boost it even more.
Look, I made this point on social media. The three bottom teams in Super League at the moment are Leeds, Hull KR and London. They have played three Championship teams, not the top Championship teams. They've played playoff chasing teams. Two of them have lost and one of them scraped through. So what does that say about the Championship? One of them, Halifax, who are eighth in the Championship, beat London, who are a Super League team. Mm. So that's how good this league's getting.
But the point I've made before, I think, on this show, is that what's really interesting about the Championship this year, one of the things that's interesting, is the fact that the two promoted clubs, York and Bradford, are both highly competitive, which is not normal, is it? Because normally the promoted clubs struggle, if we're honest about it.
It's testament to League One.
York are third and Bradford are sixth. And, you know, every game is, you know, has really got such a lot going for it.
It's no coincidence that this week as well, Ian Watson went to watch Widnes, to watch players. Simon Wolford went to watch Halifax Dewsbury to scout players. So there are more and more. I always see Dave Woods is the head scout at St Helens. Not Dave Woods, the BBC comic. Big Dave Woods, the former Castleford coach. And he is always being sent to Championship games to watch players. So the Super League clubs are watching. And I think everyone in rugby league should watch. You go through the games. I mean, some of the games, to lose to Toronto would be wonderful. Halifax Bradford is going to be great. Feve York, Widnes Lee, belting games.
Well, you mentioned the strength of League One, and League One did have a couple of games at the weekend, and some seismic games, actually, some seismic results. Coventry 41, Workington 30.
Isn't that great to see Coventry doing quite well? And, you know, you would love to think that they're destination ultimately is the Championship in 2 or 3 years' time. And London Scholars, you know, joint top of League One. That's
amazing.
That's tremendous, isn't it, for the game, I think. You know, it's going the right way at with some of these expansion clubs, you know, which have been, I mean, don't forget Newcastle Thunder are
Don't forget North Wales as well. I mean, London Scholars
absolutely
should have, you know, given the form Scholars have been in, for North Wales to keep it to one and nearly win as well.
Yeah. Right? Everyone was looking at Newcastle before the season when they were signing players like Liam Finn and Missy Talapapa, but we need to give credit to the Scholars in Coventry because they've done absolutely brilliant. Particularly Coventry, who are tapping in on the local universities. Yeah. That's a brilliant, brilliant resource for them.
And it's interesting, if you look at the Workington team, when I saw the result, I thought, well, Workington must have put a really weakened team out. It wasn't actually.
No.
The Workington team is full of players, you know, who've got well known names.
And they should have had a new head coach bounce as well.
It's amazing actually when you try and find positives in rugby league. How many they actually are, isn't there? We just need
a hashtag or something
stories,
for it. Anyway.
These stories need to be promoted.
Well, we need. If I'm really honest about it, my one disappointment. We've got Ralph Rimmer, who I like a lot as a guy, who's the chief executive of the Rugby Football League. He ought to be shouting this sort of thing from the rooftops. You know, Ralph ought to be on the phone to us on a Sunday night saying, let me have my say about what a great weekend this has been for the Challenge Cup. You know, let me give you a, 10 lines of quotes on what I'd like to see, going forward.
Ralph
is just not that sort of guy, though, is he?
He should have a column, Ralph. Ralph should have a weekly column, whether it's with on the RFL website, because the big weakness for rugby league at this moment in time is we don't shout about our victories enough. We know the downfalls because we always talk about them all the time. There are a lot of victories that this sport enjoys. And this weekend, which is brilliant. Two brilliant games in front of massive audiences on TV. Has anyone anywhere really shouted about it from the RFL?
I was going to say, we are.
Yeah, but has anyone from the RFL?
The problem is everyone is concentrating on the fact that the other games potentially didn't have the crowds at the actual games, like Hull.
But the Challenge Cup crowds are always down. It's not unusual, is it?
It's a separate problem, isn't it, the crowds?
Yeah. But
the entertainment value is fantastic. And, for example, I know a lot of people watch the Bradford-Leeds game on Saturday on BBC and then switched over to the European Championship final, the Champions Cup, I think it's called, in Rugby Union, which was coming from Newcastle. And I don't think there's much comparison between the entertainment value of the two games.
No, absolutely not.
If I'm honest about it.
Well, that's nearly it for the show. But congratulations to London Scholars, we should say. Congratulations to Norway Rugby League, which has now been officially recognised by the Norwegian government. Greece v Norway this weekend, World Cup qualifier at the New River, as a bit of a curtain raiser to London v Doncaster. And suddenly London v Doncaster's turned into a massive game.
It is. And let's not forget the NRL, who had their magic weekend at the weekend. And I think they've got 134,000 people.
Where did they get their ideas?
Through the door. So this weekend,
yes,
big weekend for British Rugby League in the NRL, as no doubt Alex can explain.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a record-breaking weekend because there's going to be six players playing in the same game for the first time ever. Three Burgess brothers and then Ryan Sutton, Josh Hodgson and Elliot Whitehead. Of course, it would be seven if John Bateman were playing, but unfortunately broke his eye socket a couple of weeks ago. So six English people playing in the same NRL game for the first time ever.
Wow. And we'll have a full report of that game in League Express on Monday, of course.
And pretty comprehensive NRL coverage in the paper too.
Absolutely, yes.
Does a good job, does Alex, when he can take himself away from Cass.
Well, let's do any other business now. Well, obviously,
it's a massive thing to be sent to Australia every week, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You'd think you'd have a tan.
Yeah.
Let's do any other business now, and just a quick plug for the NRL coverage in League Express. What's coming up on Monday?
Well, we've got the main feature will be on the six English guys in the NRL battling out. They're doing a brilliant job, those three at Canberra, and of course four if you include Bateman. They're in the top four. Of course, the game without the English thread is actually a top four clash between South Sydney and Canberra. But there is also another side to watch out for, and that's the Roosters. I think Ryan Hall is back for them. He's named in the 21-man squad.
He's
named at 21s, but that can mean that he can come in. If he does come in, he'll probably come in for Matt Ikavalu on the right-hand side with Daniel Tupu. But then again, Daniel Tupu did have a nasty injury at the weekend during the Magic Round, where it was a crusher tackle by former Catalan player Mike Oldfield. And he ended up going to hospital, but apparently I think he's okay. So whether Ryan Hall comes in on that wing or the other side, but the Roosters are a bit unbeatable at the moment. They've got Cooper Cronk and Luke Keary in the halves, and they seem insane. James Tedesco at the back as well. So we'll be focusing on the Roosters as well.
Not bad.
Excellent. And anything happening in your world, Matthew? Back chat this week?
No back chat. We had a break. We are back next week, which will be good. I best not say who's the guest yet, because it's early and people could pull out and more people could pull out. But we will be back next week. League Express, there's already a few stories in, which is I've been very uncharacteristically proactive. Martin will be pleased to know.
Very much so.
But there'll be loads in this week. It's hotting up in the world.
And Martin, anything you got in mind for your column?
Well, I'll certainly be having my say on the Nou Camp game. That's important, and on the Summer Bash, because obviously those are the two big things this weekend. But also keeping an eye on the top of the table, and also keeping an eye on the League One, because you know, there are some great games coming up in that competition, seeing whether London Scholars can keep it up. I think they're playing Doncaster this Saturday, and you've got Coventry Bears going up to Oldham. I mean, that would be an incredible thing if they could pull that off, which is unlikely, but you just never know, do you? And Whitehaven are at the top of the league, and they're at the North Wales Crusaders this week. So, but it'll all be unfolding in League Express on Monday.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll get another Scully apology as well after. Did you see what he tweeted before the Bradford Leeds game?
Oh, he said they had no chance, didn't they?
He said, "Don't know why Leeds fans are so worried. They'll win by at least 30."
Yeah.
He knows his stuff, this guy, but he has the odd hiccup.
But he's not afraid to laugh at himself, is
no,
he?
No.
You know, he leads the chorus of disapproval when he gets it so badly
wrong.
Yeah,
he does.
Which is a great... It was one reason why he's such a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion.
Anyway, Martin Sadler, a big thank you for joining
us.
Alex Davis, welcome to the show. Good debut, I thought. And Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.